I think there is a little bit of like a chip on the shoulder here in growing up on welfare and just saying, okay, well, we are going to try to do something and make this meaningful, right? And not be forgotten and not be somewhere on the margins. And then being able to say, well, let's empower other folks to do that. A lot of the career and the education for me were to kind of figure out like, how do I do that, right? It's like, it's great to have that dream. Okay, great. Like you want to help the world. Okay, nice, Philip. But how do you actually do that? And kind of having the skills and, you know, that's sort of what got me started on the whole path.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Philip Sipman is the founder of Outfox.ai, a new and growing advertising automation company that helps progressive enterprises and democratic political campaigns extend their digital advertising dollars. They're another enterprise backed by Higher Ground Labs, a key funder of progressive political technology ventures. Outfox's aim is to empower their clients to create, target, and test digital ads at scale. They also help provide consulting services to those digital teams. So, after a quick word from our sponsor, my interview with Philip Sipman at Outfox.ai.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from Timeplots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. Timeplots library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Absolutely. So I'm Philip Sipman, he, him. I'm the CEO of Outfox AI, and we are an advertising automation company. So what we do is we help progressive digital teams to boost the effectiveness of what they can get out of their digital dollars. And that can be get out the vote, that can be voter registration or fundraising, recruiting activists. So we help them maximize the effectiveness of their work. And right now we have about programs for clients running, targeting about 9 million folks across battleground states. And, you know, it's a kind of a range of clients, you know, soft side, hard side.
And for those who don't know, what is soft side and hard side?
So we have folks who are direct candidates and candidate committees, and that's the hard side of the world. We have folks who are either nonprofits or PACs on the soft side. And kind of like there's a kind of the big divide, the big financial divide between the two.
So you have a software product that helps campaigns and other organizations target their digital money.
Correct. And to do that really effectively. So it is a combination of a software gizmo, right? It's a software SaaS, as well as a marketplace of talented experts who can help with creating campaigns and kind of doing the graphics or video work, or with actually running them and analyzing them and doing that type of work as well.
So you're also providing expertise, sounds like in a sort of distributed way, to the campaigns that don't have it themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. You enjoying it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we started this 2.5 years ago. You know, it's been just a wonderful run. The political cycle is very up and down. And when we first launched was just before the 18 election. And, you know, within 2 weeks, we had like 10 clients, right? And we're like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. Like, you know, perfect. Like everything is just coming together like we expected. And then right after the election, everything dropped off. So we didn't know what the heck to do. And, you know, kind of over the course of the coming 2 years, we shifted in terms of types of clients that we work with, shifted the product. And, you know, it's been kind of this year has definitely been a hockey stick in terms of growth, in terms of kind of the impact that we've been able to have. So that's been a lot of fun.
When you say we, who is we?
I started the company with a friend of mine, Di Martirosian. Like, we've been friends for 10 years and both have kind of like similar stories. We're both immigrants who were, you know, involved in kind of nonprofits and politics, and then kind of spent a lot of time in the marketing world, kind of like in the commercial world, and kind of came back after the Trump election to really sort of provide the counterpoint and the counterweight to some of the innovation that Trump has brought into political advertising. It was the two of us who got started, and then Samantha Wolf, another dear friend, joined us, and the team right now is about 20 folks kind of who are actively working on this.
You've grown quite a bit, but you're right at the height of the cycle, so it gets to be a little tricky to run a political business.
Well, you know, the funny thing about this is that part of the appeal of this for us was that we knew that this was incredibly important, kind of like in the sort of battlefield framework, like, right, like you have for the podcast, in shifting the landscape, right, for the Democrats, for the progressive movements, and win back some of this ground that, you know, we've ceded around, you know, modern communications and modern like advertising, right? But we also saw that this is, you know, kind of applies outside of the cycle, right? So most of our clients, in fact, are nonprofit organizations that then are doing fundraising as well, right? For kind of their, you know, from their membership, are recruiting new members, you know, planning advocacy programs for next year. So there's that sort of whole set of clients. And then, you know, as we go further into the company, and into the future, we also see this like to be commercially applicable, you know, because what a small business needs and how they've been underserved from an advertising perspective, in many ways, it's, you know, it's different in terms of mechanics, but in many ways, it's similar, right? Like, they're up against, you know, these big advertising companies like Facebook and Google, and just sort of have their little budget like to figure out what to do with. And it's not so easy to make sure that you're getting the best value and really doing things in the best possible way. So so we definitely see this kind of having a broader application. You know, the election is certainly a change point, but not a end of the business for us by any means.
Without you, without turning to Outfox, what tools are available to do similar things to what they would do with you?
That's a great question. So if you start at the very top of the food chain, right? Like, you're talking about the presidential campaign, or kind of like maybe 10 campaigns down from that. Some of the tools that have been used have been these big commercial packages, right? So the Trump campaign used Sprinklr, right? It's not like they were super inventive in 16. They just had a really good tool that works for like very large programs. And it's just kind of a commercial tool that you would use as, you know, Ford or McDonald's. The advantage of those things is that they allow kind of for some of the sophistication and message testing and message targeting, right? And like, what you're trying to do is say, well, I have maybe 10 audiences, 10 geographies. So kind of I have my kind of a large pool of folks that I want to talk to and want to see what is actually working, whether it's my message is resonating there or not, right? That's on one hand. On the other, you have, again, maybe 100 different versions of the graphics, you know, 100 different versions of the copy, right? So you are trying to put together this heat map of, you know, what particular issue, what particular message, what particular way of talking about it is what's actually going to get folks jazzed up. And for different people, it's going to be very different, right? So these packages have existed on the kind of the large scale. But what's different in terms of how the Democrats and the Republicans have historically been set up is that the Republicans have been so centralized, right? Like, the RNC have bought these things and have, you know, been the master organization, right? Versus the progressive side of the world, that's a lot more distributed, right? So that same type of approach where it's enterprise, it's hundreds of dollars, kind of like as license fees, it is like something that requires like a week-long webinar, right? Like, to like get up to speed. It just doesn't apply really well. And certainly doesn't apply kind of anywhere you go further down on the ticket, or, you know, with kind of nonprofit organizations. So what folks do today, for the most part, is actually kind of log into like a Facebook or Google Ads, kind of like directly, you know, kind of their regular UI. And, you know, those things are, you know, you can kind of imagine, like, literally there's tens of millions of folks around the world who use them. They're certainly not optimized for politics and for being efficient and for being able to do these types of, A/B tests and experiments really well. It's a very manual workflow. And what the result of that is because it's hard to do, you have people kind of like say like, okay, well, I'm going to come up with like two pictures, right? And like, I'm going to just kind of get those out and I'm going to kind of run this against my entire district, right? And kind of like as one audience. And then, I'm going to kind of see what's working kind of by looking in the UI. There's just like a fraction of the insights that you get from that versus using kind of something that's purpose-built for this.
So when people talked about Trump running, I don't know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of different ads or combinations of graphics and ads in 2016, were they talking about Sprinklr?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that campaign worked very closely with Facebook, right? With embedded people.
Exactly.
In doing that. Do you know what's happening on the presidential level right now? Are both sides using those big commercial tools? How does it stack up?
It really varies depending on where you look. So first of all, on the down ballot, it still doesn't exist by and large, right? Like one of the hopes that we had when we got started, right, was like to say like, hey, as a state ledge candidate, I have $5,000, right? I'm certainly not going to be able to buy a package, anything like this. But I have this little bit of money that like can go so far, right, online. And, it's much better than a TV commercial or a mailer or something like that, right? On the smaller side of things, folks are still doing things in a little bit more traditional ways, right? And I think it's going to take some time. On the larger scale programs and, kind of like to go back to kind of like soft side and PACs, there's a heck of a lot of sophistication now on the Democratic side.
But my question is about the tools that they're using. What are they employing to do the work of it?
In some cases, it's us. In some cases, it is tools that they've cobbled together. So a lot of folks kind of like supercharge Excel, right? And like become like super duper Excel users. And there's a way to do this in Excel to some extent to run ads out of that. So there's kind of like plugins and things you can do. So it's a little bit of kind of a little bit ad hoc, but that's possible. To some extent, people just throw a lot of bodies at this, right? Because if the dollars are bigger, then you can just hire a whole bunch of folks. Again, you're not going to learn nearly as much, but you can make do.
Aren't a lot of these big PACs and campaigns, don't they use consultancies like Bully Pulpit or digital consultants with expertise in online ad placement, right?
That's right.
And a lot of them have built their own tools.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd say it's sort of like build their own tools as well as kind of use some of these commercial packages.
Are those consultancies competition for you, or do they ever employ your tools? How do you fit in?
So definitely don't see them as competition. In fact, like our goal is to be the tech layer for them, right? And replace some of these in-house tools because, while they are established in many ways, like have just a fantastic service layer, right? And kind of know the folks kind of like in the right places, in the right conversations, they're not technologists, right? So, and that applies to kind of any of the kind of the big agencies kind of that you can kind of think of, as well as, the presidential, Senate, et cetera, campaigns. When they say like, we've built tools, like, in most cases, it's like, it's a little bit of duct tape.
DS Political, right? Mm-hmm. Another consultancy. They have a down ballot thing called Democratic Ads. Are you familiar with that?
Of course. Yeah.
I've never used it, but my understanding is, you can target into your voter file your digital ads. Does it have the kind of A/B type testing that seems to be your area of expertise?
It doesn't, which is why, when we're starting, right? We were looking for a home for this, right? And like for the idea itself, right? And we were thinking, okay, maybe DSP Political would be it, maybe NGP Van, right? Like everybody has a little bit of a different approach to this, right? And what we found is that what we were hoping to do is essentially create this supercharged capability, right? That was not something that DSP Political was focused on. When we kind of like actually kind of came out with a product, like it's centered around three things, right? It's around generating a lot of creative, a lot of visuals, a lot of copy, right? And helping folks with that. It's around running and optimizing campaigns. It's about very visual analytics. You know, it just wasn't something that we've seen as a package, and it was something that was really important to see kind of like all together, because if you don't have one of these pieces, right, and you might, you know, DSP Political is more focused on like kind of the campaign management, right, but then they don't help with the creative necessarily, right, or analytics, or, you know, kind of you can take any of the others. If you don't have one of these pieces, then the whole thing doesn't work for what we want to do, right? So you don't have the messaging running against audiences and then be able to interpret that in analytics really easily. So that's why we put the whole thing together.
So can you give me an example client and how using your tool shaped how they run their program?
A couple of our big clients this year have been the Environmental Defense Fund and State Voices in kind of very different places from where they are. So EDF runs a very sophisticated kind of membership program and fundraising program. And they were looking kind of like to take that budget and to optimize it. That's one example of...
Let me follow up with that. So they are trying to get more members?
Correct.
So they're sort of prospecting for more members, and they're using your platform to target like likely people.
Exactly.
And bring them in.
Yeah. And figure out like what's actually bringing them in, right? Because there is so many different ways you can talk about the environment, right? You can talk about the scary catastrophe, right? You can talk about how Trump is failing. Or you can talk about pollution. You can talk about the polar bears. You can talk about the bald eagles, right? There's different ways to tap into this, and it works very differently with their existing members and with the different groups of new members.
And so what have they learned?
I think one of the interesting lessons was the power of like animals. that was really interesting to see because they are not like a World Wildlife Fund, but at the same time, like animals and kind of like these types of visuals really help humanize climate change. I think the other one was that their core of their program is around scientists, right? And being able to showcase scientists and the scientific work that they're doing, again, in a way that has to be very personal, right, for it to make sense. Those have been like some real standouts.
So in a case like that, do they have enough expertise in-house to use your stuff? Do you have to train them? Did you have to provide other expertise, as you kind of referred to, having some folks that you can bring in?
Yeah, so they have a sophisticated internal program, but what we typically do is kind of help folks kind of rejigger it, right, for kind of a different process for creation and kind of running and analytics, right? So that's a lot more high scale, right? So we've come in and typically kind of with someone like them would provide kind of a managed service, right? Where it's like all in, right? Like you get the software and you get the analytics and you get the creative and you get the folks who've done this, right, in this way and kind of can generate them, some of these lessons and then hand it over.
What's your favorite kind of client?
They were a favorite, certainly. Right now, the other client I want to mention was State Voices. And State Voices is very different. State Voices is a coalition of 1,600 nonprofits across the country. And individually, they might have a budget of $2,000, right? But combined together, they are a very large program. There, you can actually kind of run through across multiple states and, you know, take some of the same copy or visual, right? And individually, the organization wouldn't be able to get a heck of a lot of insights, right? Or be able to try more than one or two things. But collectively, you get these tremendous insights in terms of, again, kind of like the particular person that's in the ad that's inviting you to vote by mail or the message or something similar.
Tell me the founding story for OutFox, and then tell me how much different what you're actually doing is now from what you thought you would be doing.
For me personally, I came over to the U.S. as a refugee from Eastern Europe. I was sort of the last wave of Jewish immigration and was kind of very involved in politics in college, then actually kind of went and was a field director for a state Senate campaign right after. Then I had a big personal shift and kind of had a kid early, kind of needed to make money, kind of then went spent the next 12 years in the commercial world. So when I was looking to piece together how my career was affected, by 16, right? And what to do next and kind of what to do next for my kids. It was the combination of these two things of the past Philip and the current Philip that came together for this. And I think for a lot of the other folks that we started with, it was something a little bit similar, but in different ways. What we did as a product initially was to say, well, we are going to try to do down ballot, like I said, right? And it's going to look and feel a little bit different from DSP Political. The idea was to focus much more on Facebook rather than programmatic where they were playing at the time. So it's sort of like the focus was a little different. We were going to have more visual reporting, whatever, right?
But it was that people heard what Trump did online, wanted to make sure they had similar capability. You were interested in the smaller organizations and making an interface for them, for our side to catch up in that?
That's right.
You quickly kind of glossed through that education career, but that's 4 years at Tufts. That's a master's in Colombian innovation and entrepreneurship, and then an MBA at Stern ultimately, as well as working through a variety of industry jobs. I mean, you're a busy guy.
Yes. I always have been, and kind of raising two kids in the meantime. I think there is a little bit of a chip on the shoulder here, right? In coming as a kid, growing up on welfare and just saying, okay, well, we are going to try to do something and make this meaningful, right? And not be forgotten and not be somewhere on the margins. And then being able to say, well, let's empower other folks to do that. A lot of the career and the education for me were to kind of figure out how do I do that, right? It's it's great to have that dream. Okay, great. You want to help the world. Okay, nice, Philip. But how do you actually do that? And kind of having the skills and, that's sort of what got me started on the whole path.
There's that educational path. And then there's some consulting and some tech companies and some startups where you did a lot of work on the product side, it seems like. Mm-hmm. What were the things out of your education and out of, BCG, Motorola, LG, and your various startups that have been most useful in being now an entrepreneur in your own right?
To build a tech product, you kind of have to think of it a little bit similar to running a restaurant, right? And if you were to run a restaurant, the thing that you have to know is how to cook something really delicious. It doesn't matter if the space is beautiful or you have a pretty menu, right? The food has to be really good. I think for this, the product itself, right, the technology behind this is actually pretty freaking important. And being able to navigate this balance for us between, okay, well, how much do we replicate what's out there but make it 10 times cheaper? Or make it possible not just for somebody who is a professional with 5 years of experience doing this, right? But somebody with 6 months of experience doing this.
So you're saying that for a software product company, product comes first?
I would argue so.
And what did you do then to put that your focus on that first? And what sort of things were successful in making something good?
Part of it for me, that was actually a big learning experience because I was a product person, but then now we were a company of two and then three. And then I was also sort of became the engineer, right? So I built about a third of the product myself in the first year and a half. And that was very new and different and weird and, great ultimately. But, we still have to refactor a lot of that code and throw it out. I think in terms of actually making it happen and going on this journey, right? And we really did transition from, trying to come up with something that is kind of focused on down ballot and kind of small budget to something that is now we have $500,000 budgets running through the platform, at the same time. I think the difference that has come in over time has been talking to a lot of folks, and we've had just some wonderful investors. Higher Ground Labs is our biggest investor, and you know that's Shamik and Betsy Hoover, and they've really pushed us in a way that I think kind of like personally, they came in kind of knowing how this space works and how it works very differently from the commercial world. And we're able to connect us with folks who really kind of pushed and pulled on the idea and, you know, trashed it in some ways and, you know, made it really powerful in others.
Well, I mean, there's a long history of technical people coming into the political space and trying to build technology or build technology companies in politics and not doing well. You had interest in politics, you said in college and so on, but it doesn't sound like you were steeped in campaigns. Is it Higher Ground that created that advantage to you, or, you know, helped fill that hole? Or did you need to have a real deep understanding of politics to do what you're doing?
So I think it was three things. One is that we made a lot of mistakes and we learned on our own kind of backs, right? So the first like year and a half, it was like, okay, some things were working, some things were not working. Like, you know, we had this great success in 18, had some wonderful clients, you know, Virginia Democrats like was client number three probably, right? And like, who else can dream of like just kind of some,
and that, is that because you were introduced to them by someone who could testify to your expertise?
Exactly. Yeah.
It would have been hard to land it on your own.
Yeah, for sure. Then in some cases it was pure luck, right? You know, Black Voters Matter was a wonderful client in 18, and we really just read about their work online and just called them up, and they said, "Hey, okay, great. We need to get something out in the next week and a half." It was just serendipity in some ways, right?
There's lots and lots of potential clients. And you're doing something fairly new, so some people are going to try it.
Yeah. After the election, we were like thinking that, you know, we were going to land a whole bunch of kind of smaller nonprofits and, you know, because they were going to do fundraising at the end of the year. And they were like, great, we are, but not on digital, right? Like we just don't think of the world like that. We're not smaller versions of an Environmental Defense Fund or the ACLU, right? Like we just act and think very differently. So we had to learn a lot. I think that's one big one. High Ground Labs was a tremendous advantage, right? And it's not just the founders and kind of the organization, but the all the other companies like that had have come through that. And, you know, two of them, like Mobilize and Ballot Ready, are like a part of our package right now, right? Because we are sending a whole bunch of folks to kind of Ballot Ready pages to kind of register to vote and to, you know, get their information, right? Sort of like there is a kind of a pipe and a data pipe going back and forth. So that's really powerful and kind of mobilize the same for volunteer events. So that's been really powerful. But I think the third one is that like we didn't come into this like with the idea that we were going to do this for a cycle. I wanted to make this the next chapter of my career, and kind of like if you tried to do something for 10 years, like, well, you listen to a lot of folks.
If you were going to now advise someone else who was just starting in 2021 to build something in this space, not a competitor, but something else that was a good idea, what would you tell them based on the mistakes and the things that you did right that they should do?
You almost have to start tops down, right? And there is like a very large part of me that rebels against that, right? I don't want like DC and super PACs to be the focal point of innovation, right?
Do you mean top down in the market?
Yeah.
Do you think you made a mistake at trying to start at the long tail of the market rather than the big clients?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because a lot of times it seems like if you try to build a simple product that is aimed at the long tail, that it's easier to move up than to go back down with a complicated product into a broader market. Do you think I'm right about that or wrong?
You're absolutely right about it. And that's exactly how we started, right? And why we were able to get clients like 6 weeks after launching, right? It's like less, maybe 3 weeks.
Because you made a minimum viable product.
Correct, right? So there was no way we would have been in cycle in 18.
But now you're disagreeing with yourself from seconds ago.
Right, so, exactly.
So why are you now saying, hey, maybe it would have been good to aim at a bigger enterprise at the
beginning? So what we learned is a couple things. One is, you know, if you're starting right now for 2021, you still have some time. For 2021, there is just a few things that really matter. Like Virginia is going to matter again. Like the New York City election is going to matter again, right? So you can actually kind of look at these hotspots, right? And kind of figure out the specific clients that could be important there. And when I say bigger, I mean, you know, in Virginia, for example, right? Like it doesn't make sense to go and talk like we tried to do to the each individual state ledge candidate, right? And try to sell them on it. It does make sense to talk to the caucus, right?
Or you mean too much effort for too little money?
Correct.
From the sense of the business.
Correct. Not only that, but the way that folks organize is that they look to each other in terms of kind of like, how do we do this together, right? And that network model is really powerful, and you kind of have to approach it like that rather than individual, like campaign by campaign.
So you had sort of suggested that, you know, having a good product is first, but we know, both of us, that it's far from the only thing you have to do well to end up with a viable company. What are the other pieces that you think are critical?
I think trust, and trust can come from a couple of different places. One, it can come from being in the space and kind of being known in the space. Somebody who's worked in the space or worked on a big campaign or kind of have come from, you know, like the Obama era, right? You know, Optimizely as a company like stands out like that, right? It's like, okay, we did this for Obama. Now we can do this for a lot of folks.
You have a reference client, basically, yeah. A giant reference client.
So history with the people you're trying to sell to. So that's one. And the other one, and we didn't have that. So Higher Ground Labs, you know, helped vouch for some folks for us. But after that, a lot of this has been kind of step by step, kind of building up the reputation, sort of like building up the client case studies and saying, well, okay, so like if you trust this example that we did with, you know, in Virginia in 19 and how we did get out the vote here, okay, well, we can do something similar. It's going to be different. It's going to be the first time we are doing this. But you can kind of like picture this much more than, hey, you know, Philip has a presentation that he can bullshit you through.
So wait a minute, let's back up one step. So how did you know about Higher Ground Labs and what did it take to get them to fund you?
It was a bit of a personal connection. So I was in New York working in advertising tech. I was at a company called Outbrain that does those kind of like little, they now become very spammy widgets kind of at the bottom of news articles. Then I was at a company called MediaMath that does kind of programmatic advertising for kind of big companies like, you know, Uber and, you know, Walmart and folks like that. As I was leaving to start Outfox, one of the folks there on our policy and governance team said, oh, I know a guy who is interested in this. Like he's interested in tech and he is interested in kind of like what Democrats are up to. Andrew McLaughlin, you should talk to him. Like, let me connect you. And then a few conversations later, we got connected and kind of Andrew was part of Higher Ground Labs and linked us up there. And it was funny because they believed in the idea, but they believed in it like so much. They were actually thinking of starting it themselves. Like they were going to come up with a competitor to us and they had like a spec for it and they had a budget for it. I guess lucky for us, they didn't end up doing it and invested in us instead.
What was making you want to go into politics? It's not always a great business area.
It's not, but there were two thoughts. One was, this was for the kids. Both my kids are biracial. My older kid is non-binary. So to have, you know, kind of like Joe Biden puts it, right, to have the Klan walking around with torches and the president not being able to say no to that was a deja vu. And for me, kind of personally, kind of coming as a refugee was shocking. So I think that was a big one. And the other one was that I had a sense that the space was moving fast enough, right, where there's both, you know, for better or worse, there was a lot of money in politics and a lot of money in sort of like advocacy and nonprofits and kind of like the nonprofit sector does a lot of marketing. So there was a business for us to have in doing good work and not kind of feeling like we're selling out. I also kind of just believed in the commercial application of this, right? So if we could be successful in politics, right, and be able to kind of be known in a kind of a smaller space and be recognized and, you know, clients love us, right? Like, that's great. That's a great feeling. but to be able to translate that, you know, it's great. Like there was a bigger opportunity there too. So we didn't have to worry about, you know, in 6 days, do we have to be out on the street?
How are you doing as a company?
Good. Just kind of as a stat, like 2 weeks ago, the budget that we ran through the platform was bigger just that weekend than our entire first year. So we were incredibly happy about that. It's been growing really fast. We are profitable. So we are looking to kind of get more investment at some point in the future, but it's been good.
What's the business model? How do you charge?
The business model is twofold. One is we charged based on the dollars that we optimize, right? So there is a platform fee for the software, kind of the optimization layer and kind of allowing us to create and run campaigns and report on them. So there's a fee for that. That varies, you know, it can be like 2% for somebody who's very large and could be 10% for kind of a smaller budget. And then the second one is the creative work and the services work, kind of that marketplace model. And essentially we build it out kind of by piece. So like if like a one graphic that is kind of can have multiple variations would be $150. And we take a charge kind of a spread between what the designers charge for that versus what the clients pay.
What do you think impact it then has to a client to be using you versus not? Do you have a sense of how much it sort of stretches their dollar?
Well, yeah, we do a lot of tests on that because on a personal level, right, if we're not adding value, then like, you know, why do we exist in the world, right? We're not here to build clients, right? Like that. It's like, okay, I could do that somewhere else. So in terms of our tests, what we do is that we run kind of A-B tests, right? Like you run half of the program in maybe kind of a traditional way with your old creative or your kind of like the existing audience and kind of like by hand, and then you run half of it through us. And our typical win is about 2x. It could be, you know, you're running some conversions for kind of a fundraising campaign or getting somebody to kind of sign up for an event and, you know, like you're getting more signups for that. Or it could be a more persuasion approach where you're saying, okay, so I have an audience and I'm trying to engage them in an issue like, you know, gun safety. Are they viewing the videos, right? Are they following through to my website to then kind of read more about the candidate or the issue, right? And you look at metrics like that as kind of a measure of impactfulness. You know, we typically kind of see that kind of 2x type of return for a fee that's, you know, kind of a fraction of that. So it feels like just a fantastic win for folks.
I mean, what's the minimum scale that it makes sense to use you?
I would say the minimum on kind of an individual client or account would be about $50,000 in ad spend. But, you know, that can kind of be spread. Like, again, like I said, like State Voices is a network of much smaller nonprofits on a local level. You know, some of these budgets are $500, but, you know, they kind of like cross share. So, for example, kind of Nebraska, there is like kind of the Nebraska nonprofit table pays and kind of has some of the creative and has some of the learnings from the program. And then the League of Women Voters in Greater Omaha has another, right? So they have their own kind of custom creative, kind of with their own logo and visuals and performance. But at the same time, there a lot of the learnings are shared. I would say 50,000 on an individual basis, but like that can really break out into some smaller budgets.
When we're hearing the reporting about the big campaigns right now, you'll hear commonly a sense of sort of TV ad spending, who's spending more. I, in my own head, imagine that it's a similar kind of ratio on the digital side. What's your sense of the efficacy of these digital spends? Do they make a difference out there, like in a campaign and like getting more people to vote for you or turn out for you in that particular area?
So there's both like direct evidence of that. And in some cases, there really isn't, right? So the direct evidence, you can actually kind of learn from, you know, fundraising programs, like volunteer recruitment programs, things of that sort, where it's like, there is a kind of like a direct ROI, right? If I don't run the ads, I'm going to have fewer dollars, right? And you can like measure that like down to the cent, right? So you know that this is impacting people, right? In terms of kind of a broader question, right? Like, does it impact voters? Some of the best things you can do is do surveys, right? Before and after, right? And there's only a few places that are big enough to do that. Like, I'm kind of thinking like Priorities USA, Acronym, you know, places like that where they can run enough dollars and kind of have enough impact to be able to measure these experiments, right? In a, like a survey scale. You know, they can measure that, right? They can measure, you know, something moved somebody by 1 percentage point or 2 percentage points, right? Kind of for an audience. And that's really powerful. So you have those things. And then some of the things, it's very hard to really account for, because at the end of the day, if you're just looking at voter turnout, right, on election day, or kind of like how you won, well, was it the digital ads? Was it the TV ads? Was it the mailer, or was it the texting program, right?
Or was it not even the campaign at all?
Right. Was it the news cycle, just, right?
Yeah.
Of course. I don't think folks can account for that, and that's okay, as long as I think you have kind of a sensible approach that is honest, right? And, you know, tries to maximize your capability across all of these things, right? Like, that's a good thing. And I think we're historically, things have not been so honest. A lot of the consultants in politics, right, are incentivized based on the spend that they do, right? So unfortunately, there is sort of this, the political consultant candidate relationship is so fraught, right? And it's like people somewhat trust themselves, people somewhat trust the consultant, people somewhat trust the agencies. And I think as the more transparency there is in terms of metrics and kind of just making this stuff out there, you know, digital has kind of strong measurement on it. So you can kind of stand behind the numbers a lot more. I think the kind of the better off we are, right? Like overall, whether you can like get it down to the 1 cent type of attribution or not.
What do you think the downsides are of digital advertising?
For me, the biggest one is data privacy. So before I started this, I was at MediaMath and we launched an audiences product in Europe. And, you know, that was under GDPR. So you have just a, that is by far not like ideal, right? Like there is a lot of like weird things about that system, but you fundamentally have like a trust that, you know, you're not stealing my data as a, if I click on your ad, if I submit a donation, if I give you my text phone, if I give you my email, right? We don't have that. So we try to be sort of super, super protective of that, because we see that as a kind of a, as an advantage of being the white knights on that. But just overall as an industry, right? Like you're, especially for young people, right? Like, you know, like kind of my oldest kid, right? Like you just have this, you know, fundamental distrust, like, oh, you're like in this business that somehow is going to steal something from me, not that's just going to kind of inspire me or, you know, get me excited about doing something.
You said that you're kind of in this for the longer run. And you're a couple years in. What do you see changing in the next, you know, 2 to 4 years?
I think what this cycle was very interesting in is one is truly a reclaiming of the space, right? Like we had folks like Bernie and we had folks like Pete Buttigieg and we had Andrew Yang who really built their entire program, right? Their entire brand, what they've been able to accomplish in shifting the platform and shifting kind of how we thought, what we believed as Democrats, right? Based on digital, right? And that's the first time I think anybody's ever done that in such a scale. So I think that reclaiming is really important. I think with Donald Trump hopefully losing, I think we have an advantage to kind of even get bigger ground. As part of that, and being sort of digital first, right, in terms of how we think of what we do and how we talk to voters. The other change for me, I hope it's going to kind of live out that dream, is that this isn't just bigger programs, right? And, you know, you have, you know, we have these stats, right, that are, you know, public stats, but we have a nice dashboard to put them together, you know, around state-led candidates in Florida right now, right? Competitive races, right? Some of them are spending, some of them not are spending online, right? And some of them are like, you know, running experiments and kind of we can see how many different ads and versions they run. And some of them are not, right? And it's too bad if that's a weakness, right? Like, let's not have that one.
Is there a question that I failed to ask that I should have?
I think you were very thorough. One thing for me is, about like, what do folks learn from this, right? Like, okay, so you've done a bunch of experiments. Like, how do you, what did you find out? You kind of asked that a little bit in the middle there, but you know, for me, there's a couple of like big insights that we've learned across all of our clients. And one is that diversity really works, right? So like having ads with folks who look like you really matters. Like it's both like an important thing to do in the world, right? As a movement, as people, right? But it also performs really well. Okay, so that's really great. The other one that was, it's actually very surprising, is that positivity really works, especially for the Democrats. You know, you kind of have this debate, okay, like what Trump is doing well, you know, like these experiments that he's running. He's actually, I think, squandered a lot of the technical capability and the time advantage that he's had because he hasn't been able to leverage this positive angle, right? And one of the strongest ads we've ever run still was in 18. It was Elaine Luria in Virginia too. And the ad was simply, you know, Elaine is a 20-year Native veteran. And in Virginia Beach, that really matters, right? That's where the base is. You know, we tried a whole bunch of other angles, right? And like attacking on healthcare and doing all sorts of other things, you know, with the folks there. And, you know, that was super powerful. So I think positivity works for digital ads in a way that, you know, maybe folks don't appreciate that. Just kind of hearing like just how much, you know, social media is around like kind of negativity and attacks and things like that. I think those are a couple of really powerful lessons for us, like from this entire experience. Maybe the last one is that humor really works. We do a lot of persuasion programs. Like right now, there's a big one in Maine, and you know, there's some attack ads, and then there's some kind of funny gifts as part of that, and the gifts do really, really well. And you sort of see the reactions and kind of the follow through on that, and they're fantastic.
You mentioned that you tie your software into a couple of the other companies in the space. You mentioned also people who run firms that are kind of alongside yours. How do you think about how the progressive political technology ecosystem develops going forward and your place in it? Do you think about combining your firm with others? Do you think about, you know, being acquired or acquiring? You said you thought about raising money. Like, where do you think you want to be, and where do you think this is going more as an ecosystem than just thinking about your firm alone?
So the funny thing about the ecosystem is that there's a lot of successful companies that are actually doing very well financially, right? So, you know, a couple of that I mentioned, like Mobilize and Ballot Ready, like they have, you know, giant contracts in some cases with, you know, like at Twitter, right? And just because it is the returns and kind of the revenue comes in spikes, right? Doesn't actually make them bad businesses, right? Like just kind of from a financial sense. I think that's one side of it. So in terms of that cohort of companies that have developed and have, you know, focused on something very specific and become the best at that, you know, for the most part, they can continue growing and being successful and get more clients and, you know, not need to merge or do anything else kind of like that's particularly wacky strategically, right? In terms of just the space overall, I think some of this can certainly work well as like the sum of the parts, right? And like kind of NGP Van and like every action sort of like a great example of that, right? Or, you know, kind of like consolidation is smart in some cases. It actually adds a lot to like all playing together. I don't see that happening like right away. In fact, maybe I see it kind of keeping as they are with the companies that are there, and probably more companies appear, because I don't think the playbook has been written on most of this tech. Like even in like texting, like you have like maybe like 6 or 7 companies that are really good that do texting. And yeah, it would make sense for some of them to join, but they all do texting in somewhat different ways. So not necessarily. And I think some of these other things like the kind of around fundraising, around canvassing, like around phone banking, like there's just like a lot of really, really core around TV and making TV much more accountable. Some really, really core things that politics and advocacy and nonprofits involved, that there's just a huge amount of innovation that's still possible. And I'm sure there's going to be new companies that come up to do that.
You think that the sort of stable of tech companies in the progressive space that you're one of have had made a difference in 2020 elections? Do you think it's going to result in more wins for Democrats or not?
I think that's unquestionable, you know, and not just kind of to toot my own horn, but, you know, like just knowing our metrics, right? Like we can see, okay, so we spent X number of dollars and that translated into Y number of kids in Montana registering to vote. And Montana is not a ginormous place, right? Like each one of those votes really matters, or kind of same thing. If you look at, you know, vote by mail requests, or if you look at how folks are reacting to maybe a kind of a more traditional kind of like attack ad versus something that's kind of funny and humorous and you wouldn't do on TV normally, right? I think that we have the numbers across the board to prove a lot of these. And yeah, totally.
Well, Philip, it's really good to catch up with you. And I'm glad you're, you know, making some impact out there and had such a busy fall. It's very good to hear. I hope we can maybe check in again down the road.
That sounds great. Yeah, I'm excited about 2021.
Anything else you want to say?
I think that's it. Other than the fact that thank you for having us. This podcast was, you know, really inspiring to us when we got started. And it was sort of just like, hey, there's other folks who are also trying to be entrepreneurial in this, right? And I hope it really inspires others. So thank you so much.
That was Philip Sitman. He's at outfox.ai. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.